podcast in the world. From WWE to DNA Impact, by way of the NWA, it's time for Reffin' It Up with legendary referee Brian Heppner and guest host, Mr. Reffin' Rant himself, Jimmy Corderas. An all-new episode starts in... This is Reffin' It Up.
Welcome back to Reffin' It Up. I am RJ. I'm joined by the two greatest referees of all time.
First, hey, RJ. Let's stop the bullshit. Let's do this. We're gonna do something a little different than we ever do. Okay. And it's because we have a very special guest and a great dear friend of mine, Chavo Guerrero. And I wanna just nix all this stuff. And here's what I want to do, because I don't want to touch on the man thing, because that's disgusting and gross. And I'm sorry, Jimmy. Jimmy, I'm sorry too. But anyway, RJ, I want to go right now to our second count and bring in Chavo, and let's talk Chavo.
This is your two count.
We are back with our second count. I am very pleased and honored to welcome in. He is a former WWE Cruiserweight Champion, former WWE Tag Team Champion, and ECW Heavyweight Champion, Mr. Chavo Guerrero Jr. Chavo, welcome to the show, man.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me, guys. Good catching up with my old bros, man.
Hey, Chavo, it's wonderful to have you on, man. I've been working on you for, I don't know, since before Christmas. And your schedule's been hectic, but you know what? I was willing to wait as long as I could to get you on, because I'm excited to have you on. And Jesus, could you win any other fucking title?
Right. And they can, it's funny that people remember those. I don't remember them.
That's funny. I got a few here on the wall.
And that's the only ones that my wife lets me keep. You know, she's like, I don't want wrestling stuff all over the house. I'm like, all right.
I hear you. My wife, I've only allowed to have one room with it, and that's in my office here that I'm sitting in. And that's pretty much it, but it's great to have you on. It's great to see you, my friend. And thanks, it's been a while. And, I can't wait to just get into this, because, as you know, we have a bit of a history together, and we've had some fun, brother. We have.
Well, Chavo, later on, I'll explain this to you. I'm sure it's not something you know, unless I was drunk and told you about it, but that could be possible. But you impacted my career quite a bit, and I'm gonna let you know about that here as we get to that portion of where we're at. But I'm just so happy to have you on, and we just want to kind of dive into a little bit of some of your accolades and things of that nature. And something that was really surprising to me, which I just never realized, really, to be honest with you, until I went through all the show notes and went through stuff. You had many character changes throughout your career. And I don't know whether to laugh or But the one that was most intriguing to me was the one where you were in a golf cart. And
they Kerwin called White, you Kerwin White.
Yes. Say that again.
Kerwin White, man. Yeah. Oh. Totally.
Well, I'm dying. And I know I'm skipping way ahead, boys. I'm sorry. But I really want to know what you thought of this.
You know, man, to me, it's just... you're just playing a character. It's no difference than playing a character in a movie. So when I got off a plane and landed, I got a plane from Japan and landed at Raw, and Vince comes up to me and goes, you know, this voice, and he's like, well, hello, Kerwin. Because you remember one of our directors, Kerwin.
Yes.
Yes. So little like white Jewish guy, right? And then I'm like, okay, what is this about? Well, today, you're going to denounce your Hispanic heritage and you're going to become a white guy. And I'm like, okay, so I got two choices here. I could really quick in my head, I thought I could either say like, oh man, I don't want to do that. And then, you know what happens with that? You can either get canned or you're shuffled back down to the bottom of the pile. Or if Vince has got something for you, he's like, oh, well, let me just try to make this work. So basically I'm like, all right, let's do it. You know, so it really is just... was me kind of denouncing my Hispanic heritage and and, you know, saying that I'm white. But being a heel, I was kind of doing it. You know, obviously you can't do it the way we did it back then. You can't do that now. It was very borderline racist, very. But in the sense, I was trying to piss everybody off. I was trying to piss Hispanics off because I denounced my Hispanic heritage. I was trying to piss off any Caucasians because I was making fun of them because I was dressing super like pastel and like golf clothes and just being this like super douchebag. So I was trying to piss them off too. And then I was only wrestling like minorities. So I was pissing them off too, you know? So it was kind of pretty, you know, and then like my catchphrase was, if it's not white, it's not right. And I changed my finish to the rolling half crab and I used to call it the white out. And I told Vince, so eventually, you know, we kept talking about it. And he loved it. He was like, yes, oh, I love it. And, you know, this Vince voice. But then I told him, I go, man, you know, this is a while ago. You know, you can't do that nowadays. But back then, you know, like maybe it was 2004, I would think, right before Eddie passed away. And I told him, I go, you know, I want to end up coming out in a white sheet. You know, I really do. I want to, that's what I want to do, like something like that. I go, we don't have to say it's the Klan, but we can say it like I was a ghost and it's not Halloween or something like that, you know? And Vince was like, oh yes, let's do that. So, you know, I think it just got, what happened is it got kind of got, I think the networks at that point were trying to go very PG and very kid friendly and get away from the attitude era. That would have worked great. Now, you know, we're kind of out of that era, you know, and I just think that it just got a little too racist and, you know, and then what happened was when Eddie passed away that we never even had a change. I just was Chavo Guerrero again. That was it.
Wow. Yeah, I see. I remember those days. And like you said, it entered that PG era. Did you know, because we talk about on our show, especially because Brian and I really love the fact that characters, people get invested in you. I mean, you can do all the twisting, burning 450 hammer Phoenix splashes you want, but it's you that gets over as a character and as a personality people get invested in.
So true. The stuff that people remember, they always come up to me. They want like Pepe stuff. They always bring up me and Pepe from WCW. You know, I had a stick horse that I used to ride around in that I was crazy. They bring up the Kerwin White stuff. I mean, they bring up Los Guerreros, but that was me and Eddie. So they liked the characters we played, to be honest. They liked, you know, when Eddie was super like Cholo or Cholo Mexican, where he's still super vato, when he was like, hey, orale, mamacita. They bring up all that stuff. At the end, when he was just Eddie, you know, they loved that. But when they imitate Eddie, they don't imitate that. They imitate him as, you know, as like, you know, the Gringo Locos type stuff.
Some of the fun I had, you brought up Eddie, some of the fun I had with you guys in the ring was during the lie, cheat, and steal stuff. I don't know if you remember this one incident. You guys were wrestling Shelton Benjamin and, Charlie Haas. And it was,
don't tell me it's with the wrench.
Yes, it's the wrench. Of course, and it was basically what happened was, I'll explain to Brian here. Basically what happened was the corner you guys were in, one of the bolts was coming off the ring post where the ring post attaches. Right. And Chimmel got up and started tightening it from the timekeeper's position. And you guys were like, give me that. Give me the wrench. And, you know, you did the whole spot where you were hiding it from me the entire time and using it on Charlie and Shelton. And then what you did was you slid it in the back of my pants, sticking out, and said, don't sell it. So I ignored the whole thing. And then, you know, Charlie pulls it out of my pants and I catch him with it. And
see, oh, we couldn't have planned it. We could not have planned it to go that way. It was so, Eddie told me, he goes, hey, cause I was in the ring selling and they're getting heat on me. And then Eddie, I kind of saw him had it. And he goes, was it grab the rope or try to get Charlie to grab the rope. So anytime he'd grab it, Eddie would pull out the wrench and smack him on the hand with it. And he'd pull his hand off. And then eventually he threw it to me and I ended up using it. And I threw it back over Corderas's head to Eddie and he caught it. And then we put it in the back of Jimmy's pants, like he said, and then Charlie ended up grabbing it, and then that's when you caught him. It was perfect. We could not have planned it. It was so awesome. That and that's what I love about wrestling, the style that I was brought up with. I was brought up with the catch as catch can style, which is action reaction. So you don't plan a match A to Z. You know, you have an outline, but you whatever there's so many things that it whatever the way the match goes in the ring, what the audience calls for is what we end up doing. So I just think that's lost in today's wrestling. I think they just plan everything, you know, A to Z, and if they get messed up or if the crowd's not buying it, that's just the way they're going, you know. So I always love the improvisation, the improv of wrestling. That's which was the funnest part to me.
So Chavo, now I have to talk about what I said earlier because now this is where we're at. Once again, I don't know if you remember this or not, but there were the same tag team, and you and Eddie, God bless it, and we went around the world with that match.
That's right.
All right, and this is no disrespect, so don't take this the wrong way for the other guys, not from front, not for me. We literally had a paper, scissors, flipping coins kind of thing of who wants to do this match because Eddie was in a different state, which was fine. It was what it was. And I'm sure you remember this. He was in Eddie mode. And I would say Charlie and Shelton weren't green, but were green to the big stage.
Sure, absolutely.
And I won the contest. I won the contest, and I was the referee for majority of this whole entire thing. I don't even know how Jimmy got involved in this wrench thing, by the way. But you and Eddie taught me how to be the referee I became because I was scared to death to do this match. We had some physicalities, we had some backstage stuff going on. I won't go into all that kind of stuff, but I'm just saying there was behind the stage, behind the curtain stuff that went on, and it made me a man in that ring and on that stage. And I'll never forget, it was you who told me, listen, come out here to the ring and do your job like you do, get the logistics of it, but throw the rest of that shit away because all of it's going to change. You need to live by the moment, and we're going to tell you the moment, you just don't know the moment, and you have to react and do it natural. Which scared the living fuck out of a guy who's fucking just trying to be the man. You know what I mean? I'm trying to live in these shoes of Earl Hebner. And I'm in there with Eddie and Chavo Guerrero. Can't believe that, first of all. And then, second of all, I'm being told by Chavo that throw the fucking script away and we're going to work through it. Don't worry about the script, but just go ahead and listen to it. Am I right
Improv.
or wrong?
Absolutely improv, man. And the reason I remember that a lot of the referees didn't want to work with us because we made them work. You're gonna be counting a hole, you're gonna be working. It's not a night off. You're gonna be working in there, you're gonna be counting, you're gonna be holding back, we're gonna be five false tags. We're gonna, you know, you're gonna all light cheat steal stuff. You know, you have to treat it like a shoot. I mean, you had to be a real like a referee like from the UFC. Working with us because that's just how we worked. You know, you had to hold us back, you had to get in our face, you had to treat it like a shoot 100%. And I remember you guys were great. I mean, you two were awesome working. We loved it because you guys, it was real to us, it
Well,
was real out there. You know, it was sure we were working and stuff, but at the same time, it was God, we were like three quarter shooting out there, you know. And I remember my dad getting in the ring when he first came in, and he told us, he goes, "Man," he goes, "you guys are doing what we used to do in Japan, man." He goes, "You guys are like you're shooting in there." And I was like, shooting, so anybody's listening, it means work is like the pro wrestling style, and like the UFC style would be shooting. So we're pretty much on the level, you know, in our matches. So that's what we demanded of our referees as well. You had to be on it. And if you weren't, we'd tell you. We used to tell you guys. I remember telling Jimmy, if you can catch us cheating, like disqualify us. If you can catch us, you're not gonna be able to catch us because we really tried to cheat behind your back. Like 100%. It wasn't like the referee sitting there and, you know, like you see it, you know, today or, you know, in a lot of matches to where they're, you know, the referee's got his back for 10 seconds to the heels and they're choking for 8 seconds. And I'm like, just a quick punch and stop. You don't need to show the whole fans, just a couple of them. And, you know, that's what we demanded. And you know, you guys both rose to the occasion. We love that.
Well, thank you, because we learned from you guys. And one of the biggest things I learned from you and Eddie during those times was, especially in tag matches, when it's time to get heat, the heat needs to go to the right people,
right,
the heels, not right, the referee. And when they do stuff like they're doing, like you said today, where their back is turned for 8 to 10 seconds and they're getting distracted over the dumbest stuff. They're not being creative. The heels are not being creative in the distraction of the referee to get the heat on them.
Exactly. I say that all the time. I said, guys, anytime I do like an indie show or whatever, I pull the guys aside and I say, look, you guys are doing the work. Be selfish out there. You should be getting the heat, not the referee. Because the fact that you took way too long in the heat and choking and the cheating part, you jobbed out the referee. So now no one's looking at you and saying you guys are assholes. Everyone is looking at the referee and saying you suck. You can't catch him. And that's wrong.
And just to give you an example, and not to go back to the wrench thing, but okay, I didn't know what you guys had until Charlie pulled it out of the back of my pants and showed it.
Absolutely.
Do you know what I mean? I didn't know it was a wrench. I had no clue.
It was like magic, bro. And I always say that, like, wrestling's like magic, like Chris Angel. Chris Angel, we know it's an illusion. We know it's not really real. He's not really levitating. But when he starts floating, you go, oh my God, how's he doing that? What's going on? Oh, God's crazy. The second you see that string, you change the channel. Like, oh, okay, that's lame. Walk away. But if he keeps getting you and keeps suspending your belief, you keep watching. And wrestling's the same way. Everybody knows it's a work. But if we can get them to think, you know, I know this wrestling's not real, but these guys are really going for it. And the second we show the string, which is like the wrestling punch or cheating, we're having the referee in on the gag, then they change the channel. Then they lose their suspended belief and you lose your heat. And that's the reason I think why when we were heels, Eddie and I, why they hated us so much, because we never let them. We kept their suspended belief that we were really these dirty Mexican heels. I mean, they used to call us wetbacks and throw stuff at us. And we wanted to fight our way back every single night to the locker room. That's how we wanted to wrestle, you know? So if we would have lost that heat, well, we're working against ourselves, you know? So I remember Vince McMahon pulled us aside and said, hey, you guys, and that was a huge compliment coming from him. And he goes, he doesn't give compliments very often, but he said, you two are the best tag team that I've seen since Pat Patterson and Ray Stevens. So anybody who is listening and don't know who Pat Patterson and Ray Stevens are, they are two of the best pro wrestlers of all time. So great tag team too. Yeah.
And Chavo, I have to just say one more thing on this and then we'll give up. We've been on this for a little bit right here. I like it. Mm-hmm. But when we were doing this tag thing, I'll never forget the rope spot. Remember the rope spot?
Absolutely.
And it came out of nowhere again.
Holy.
It was just Eddie going down the apron and me reprimanding him, get back over here and grab the rope. And I'd put over the rope. You got to grab the rope. He'd go down the apron again. I'd put over the rope. I'd go down again. I'd put over the rope. And then finally one day, I think it was you that got my attention and turned me and said, Eddie, pull the rope off and move it. And so because we had it tied to where you just went down the little loop and it just stayed there. He could go right quickly through the loop, put it around the rope, loop it again, and he slid the bitch all the way down. And I will say I had to put myself over because I did sell it because you said sell it. He's moved the rope. And I said, oh, fuck. So I turned around and went to the corner. He wasn't there. He was down the rope. He goes, I got the fucking rope. I've got the fucking rope.
Oh, that's perfect. And then we went. That's when we were baby faces. And that's – we kept cheating, like cheating, stealing, but we do it cute now, you know. When you're right. When we were heels, we were dirty. When we were baby faces, we cheated, but we did it really cute. And that was a cute thing. So I was kept selling, but as soon as you caught him, he had the rope all the way down – the tag rope all the way down the actual top rope. Then we went into the comeback. Then I would make the hot tag, and then we'd come to comeback. So that was – yeah, man. We had so many different – innovative stuff that we just kind of did on the fly, you know, just that we would choke with that tag rope too. If you remember that.
Yeah.
And people never had, you know, we stole that from my dad and Hector. They used to do that back in the day. You know, they were the original Los Guerreros, but, that, you know, people had never seen that. Like it'd been around and just not anymore. People forgot about that. So I'm like, if we have a tag rope, why not choke with it? You know, we would cheat with anything we could.
And you know what the tag rope means now, Chavo?
Nothing.
Nothing.
Yeah.
And it's true, you know, and unfortunately, like I always, you know, God, there's got to be rules in wrestling. What other sport, if this is an actual trying to work this as a sport, what actual sport can you push a referee? Can you, you know, not listen to referee? I mean, without getting disqualified, not even soccer, like soccer, you know, the referee's in your face, you know, pulling red cards. NBA, you know, you can't. You have to treat the referee like he's got. Any independent show I do, I tell him, I go, hey guy, you have to treat like a shoot. You use your authority. If anybody questions your authority, sometimes you got to disqualify somebody. That's just the way it goes. I mean, was brought up that if your shoulders weren't off the mat on the 2.5-3 count, then you're out. It's done. If you didn't break on 5, then you're disqualified. And you guys remember when WWE started giving you guys bonuses for actually being referees, and disqualifying people and doing stuff like that, and it kept people in check. And that's what's missing in wrestling. So I think, you know, if you don't make it back in the ring on 10, I mean, it's a liberal 10, then you're disqualified. It's just the way it goes. If you're cheating, you get caught cheating, you're disqualified.
The other thing, and again, before we move on again, that I have to thank you and Eddie for too, is also, I had been, before working with you guys, I had been refereeing for many years.
Absolutely.
But I was also a little bit hesitant to voice on any opinions or concerns when I was refereeing matches. But I remember, you know, sometimes even us come up with ideas. And I remember one time sitting there and then Eddie just looked over and said, "What?" I said, "What do you mean what?" He says, "I see the wheels turning. What do you got?" So I gave him that idea and he says, "I love it. We're going to do it." And I was like, "Holy shit, he's going to do it. I can't believe it." You know what I mean?
You're part of the matches as well. You know, people forget that there's even a referee in there. That referee is my third or my fifth guy in that ring. I call things to the referee. He's part of the match. He's part of the illusion of the shoot. He's got to be part of the match. I can't have a flounder referee in there. He's got to hold people back. He's got to really do his job. He's got to work. And people get used to being a referee and not doing that. Just kind of, they're just calling it, phoning it in. And you're not, you know, you're just as much part of the match as we are. And you've been doing it longer than half of the guys. Anyways, you've seen so much. Yeah, there it is, Brian. You've seen it so much more. You've seen it so much, so many more matches than these guys had, you know. So listen to your referee. Listen to, when we said Chimmel. Chimmel sat at ringside and watched thousands of matches. If you had any smarts at all, you would have been picking his brain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. So
I'm not actually talking to that dirty gin player, but you would definitely. Be picking his wrestling brain.
Oh yeah, I would never admit it to him when I see him, but you are absolutely
that's right. Absolutely. All those guys, Mark Yaton, those guys were down at ringside for thousands and thousands of matches over countless, so many years, 20 years, 30 years. They've seen more matches than I've done. So I mean, why would I not pick their brain at it? You know,
Kimmel's mentioned on this show quite a bit, but it's never in a positive light, so he'll probably love that.
we love to hate Tony Chimmel. He's the best person to hate, but he's the best. He's the best. Awesome. I love him, Jeff. I love Tony.
I think if every time Tony Chimmel was mentioned on the show and I'd make a list, I'd probably have about 100 pages by now. So
you guys remember SmackDown? Whenever he'd say SmackDown, we'd all imitate him, right?
Oh yeah,
all the time.
He's the best.
Well, Justin Roberts still imitates him now.
Absolutely,
that stuff where he's Gian, you know.
That's right. That it's funny to see Justin, you know, getting let go from WWE for being. Doing his stuff and them telling him, you're trying to get yourself over. Well, now he's over there in AEW, and the new SmackDown, or now WWE announcer, is totally imitating Justin Roberts. I mean, legitimately, I was like, that he's stealing that straight from Justin.
I hear you.
You know what? I want to real quick, RJ. I know you want to go, and I'm ready for you to go. But yeah. I noticed this too. And Chabo, do you still watch In Current Product?
At times I do. It hard. It just depends who's working. A lot of times I get so frustrated watching, going, God, man, they're just working way too hard. It's working. I would say work smarter, not harder. And a lot of times it's just they're not suspending my belief, you know. So a lot of times, so it just depends. If I see Ray, you know, Ray versus an Orton, of course I'm going to watch something like that. Oh. When I get guys that are just really got so good in that ring together, that you can't not watch it.
Well, if everybody works like you, we'll all be fucking dead because we're shooting.
but at least would be it would look believable, and you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, absolutely, it looked believable, and you know, I hopefully wouldn't kill my body from doing 15,000 bumps off the top rope, you know,
in one match. Yeah, it's like, as I like to say, everybody like now today likes to put 20 pounds of potatoes in a 10-pound bag.
That's well, you said it nice, because Austin says that you're trying to fit 12 pounds of shit in a 6-pound bag.
Well, I'm Canadian, I have to put it that way.
But yes, but absolutely, you know, less is more a lot of times in pro wrestling. And I think what's going on, and don't get me wrong, because these guys are incredible athletes and I love the product and things evolve 100%. But they see what Ray did, what we used to do, what Eddie used to do, and they didn't realize the working part. They just saw the high-flying moves, and they wanted to imitate those high-flying moves. But they missed all the working stuff. So I would always say that what made Eddie so great, what made Chris Benoit so great, what made, you know, Ray so great was the stuff they did in between the moves. That's what made them so great. That makes a good wrestler a great wrestler. It's not the moves. Anybody can do the moves. It's like the moves help tell the story, but the moves themselves are not the story. It's in, like I compare it to what I do in movies right now is explosions help tell the story, but explosions themselves are not the story. So I've seen movies where they just explode and blow stuff up, but I'm not connected to the characters. I could care less if they live or died, just blow some more stuff up. But, and it's true. Like a lot of these, you know, I want to like the matches I see some of the young guys, I just want to see them do a bunch of flips. I don't really care if they win or lose. Okay, whatever. They're not taking me on that emotional roller coaster. And I always compare it like you have, remember Ric Flair and Shawn Michaels? Ric Flair is one of Ric Flair's many retirement matches at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Very end. God, man, when you know, that whole storyline. But at the very end, when Shawn Michaels loading the boot in the corner and Ric Flair is staggering to get up and he looks at Shawn and goes, come on, come on. And Sean looks at him and says, I love you. I'm sorry. And super kicks his face off in 1, 2, 3. That meant that super kick and the way he did it meant more than any moonsault or any chair shot or any anything else you can do. The way that they did that, that still gives me chills.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I hope I don't step on your toes again, RJ, but you brought up something, Chavo, that you've been working a lot in Hollywood and working with actors and kind of guiding them with work inside the ring. Right. Is there one thing about the working with the actors that's unique in the sense that they kind of grasp like what you're talking about, that wrestling is about storytelling, is about, you know, getting invested in the emotionally invested in the characters, maybe to a certain extent, I hate to put it this way, a little bit more than some of the younger talent today who are very talented, like you said, but at the same time, not grasping that aspect of the business.
True. And it's like the older generation, my dad's generation of wrestlers, they may have not done as many moves as we did, but they are much better storytellers. And that's what we really do in the ring, is we tell stories. So back to the start of your question, when I'm on set and I'm training an actor, because actors or actresses or actors, when they get in the ring, they're a little apprehensive because they see the stuff that we do in wrestling. They think, oh my God, it's all these moves. But it's not those moves. And I always explained to them, I said, you know how to wrestle already. You just don't know, you know, because what you do on camera in a scene is you're telling a story. You have a paragraph that you have to recite, but it's not just saying the words. The words don't mean anything. It's the way that you're delivering those words and your cadences and your pauses, right? And they said, yeah. And I said, that's what we do in the ring. The move doesn't mean anything. It's the way I deliver the move and what part of the match I put the move in. That's what we do. We tell stories, and that's when the light bulb comes on to these guys, and they're like, wow, you mean, oh my God, I can do this. Well, you know, sometimes it'll be apprehensive. I can't do this certain move. I said, I don't care. I got 5 million moves I can do to fill this spot for you to tell this story. And they're like, oh, that's right. I get to tell a story. And that's what you do in wrestling. So Jeremy Allen White, we just did that show, a movie called The Iron Claw. Obviously you guys have heard of it, but Jeremy Allen White, who's the Bear, you know, and also Lip and Shameless, great guy. But what he really took away from wrestling was he said in an interview and he was like, God, man, after all of these moves, and he's like, I just want to like calm down and like relax. And Chavo's saying, that's when you got to fire up. He's like, fire up? What do you mean I got to fire up? He's like, I'm so exhausted. But that's when he realized, he goes, God, it's those moments in between the moves almost mean more than the moves themselves. And I said, exactly, exactly it.
So, Chavo, I have a 11-year-old son here at home, and he's big into wrestling, kind of brought him up the same way I was brought up in professional wrestling. And he always constantly, I want storytelling, you know, I want to see, you know, good guys, bad guys. And I constantly go back to what Jimmy and Brian were saying back, like I said, in those, you know, 2000 through 2003, 2004 there, when you and Eddie were in the Los Guerreros. And I said, buddy, look. Watch what Chavo and Eddie are doing. Don't right. watch what anybody else is doing. See how they're telling a story without doing that much, and how good they are being a heel. It's all in your facial region, like Jamie's saying. Have you, obviously with the technology is now YouTube, Peacock, so on and so forth, all these streaming applications. Are you seeing, when you're doing a lot of these, you know, these movies or these conventions or indie shows, like you mentioned, are you seeing a lot of those younger generations coming up to you and say, hey, I'm watching you, or my dad is showing me your stuff, or or Eddie stuff, or Ray, or whomever? Have you been seeing a lot of that?
Constantly. It comes any show I'm at, any wrestling convention I'm at, any indie show, anything that people come from wrestling, I see it all the time. In fact, when I went to AEW for about 3 months, right in between filming the first and second season of Young Rock. And I was just about 3 months kind of in, did some stuff and out. But I remember seeing a match, and it was Santana and Ortiz, and they were wrestling FTR. Great match. Awesome. These guys went for it. It was awesome. But I saw so many different Guerrero stuff in there. Like, they were doing like different moves, like, you know, frog splashes and Three Amigos and Gory Specials, but just the way they were working. So I pulled them all back afterwards and said, guys, you guys killed that match. And I said, and I appreciate the, you know, the Guerrero moves in there. And both of those teams told me, they go, you're the teams that we study. You and Eddie, we study them. That's from Santana Ortiz and from FTR. They're like, that is who we're trying to imitate, is you guys. You guys, there was another one they were talking about, Arn and Tully back in the day, the Brainbusters. They go, those are the teams that we're imitating, because anytime when we were heels, I never wanted a clap. I never wanted people to say, well, you know, Chavo and Eddie, you know, they're mean, but you know, God, they're good. I never wanted that. I wanted them to boo us out of the building. That's where the whole light, cheat, steal came from. We never, when we were heels, we never won with a finish. We'd always cheat to win. That's where that came up to with. They were always like, you know, the office, why don't you guys do a double frog splash? I'm like, why are we going to do that? All you're going to do is cheer. We're cheating. We're going to try a double frog splash and we're not going to make it, but we will pull tights and we'll hit you with a belt, or we'll, you know, put a foot on the rope. That's how we win. And then, of course, when we became baby faces, of course, we started winning with frog splashes and different stuff like that. But we never won with the frog splash, you know, as heels.
Wow. So, Chavo, here's what we're going to do. We're going to go to our third count, and we're going to come back, and we're going to have some fan questions that We're going to try and get to some of them. Not all of them, obviously, because I know you're a busy guy. I've been working on trying to get you on here for 2 freaking months. I know you're busy.
I got time for you guys today. I've set aside some time knowing that we were going to hang out. So
cool. So what we're going to do is this. We're going to go to our third count. When we come back, we're going to do fan questions. We're going to do Jimmy questions. We're going to do Brian questions. We're going to do RJ questions.
Awesome.
And we're going to also dive into a little bit of stuff, too, that this will be very interesting. And we're going to do that when we come back with our third count.
This is your 3 count.
What would a Reffin' It Up podcast be without a third count? It's a 3 count here when we're here with the great Chavo Guerrero Jr. And we still got a couple of more questions. We've got some fan questions for you as well. But I've got one for you first, if we can talk about your career. You've been to New Japan Pro Wrestling. You've wrestled in Mexico doing the lucha style, the catch wrestling, Europe, everywhere. I mean, it's easy to ask you, okay, what's the difference between all those different styles? I have a different question. What was similar with all everywhere you have been? That it was kind of like, whether it was North America, Europe, Japan, there had to be something that was similar, because as I like to put it, the wheel was invented. It was made of stone, then it was wood, then it was rubber, vulcanized rubber, whatever. But at the end of the day,
still wheel.
It's round.
That's exactly how wrestling. It's still wrestling. They're similar. It's all wrestling. It's all wrestling. It's all the same rules. They might tweak them a little bit. You know, like in Mexico, we work the right side. You know, we work the right headlock, a right side. It's still wrestling. It's just a little bit of a different style. You know, in Japan, it's still wrestling. The fans are, there'll be 10,000 people in the arena and it'll be super quiet. You can hear a pin drop. But you know how to get them. It's still wrestling. Just they're all a little bit different styles, but it's all wrestling. It's all in a ring. It's all with a referee. And you 1, 2, 3 finishes the match. So it's all the same. You know, we didn't care if it was a 16-foot ring, an 18-foot ring, a 20-foot ring, a 22-foot ring. Still four ropes. I don't care if it's cable ropes or if it was rope ropes or, you know, high rings. Small. It's just a ring. It's the same thing. You just adapt to it. And that's really, to be honest, I've said that a lot before, because really the Guerreros, we shouldn't have really made it in this business. We're a bunch of small brown guys in this kind of big white world, you know, and we shouldn't have been around as long as we did. But the reason why we were is because we learned to adapt. We learned how to work. Adapt to our opponents, you know, work the Japanese style, work the you know, an American style, work the European style, work lucha libre style, work tag teams, work singles, work heels, work baby faces, be managers, you know, anything. We really learned how to do it all, because that, you know, we were raised on wrestling. Our entire lives was all wrestling. So that's what made us popular. I kept us around so long, so we were able to adapt.
You made me with what you just said. I had this down, and I find this very interesting. I'm not saying you'll agree, but I think so. But I think you're one of those movement guys that didn't have the big physique, didn't have the big white guy, as you said, whatever appeal that a Vince McMahon loves. And you were kind of like with that Rey Mysterio, Shane Helms. I know I'm forgetting people, but I'm saying that WCW cruiserweight type thing. WCW obviously got purchased by the WWE. And then you guys came into the fold. And you are not the prototypical type. Shane Helms is not the prototypical type. Rey Mysterio, not the even Eddie Guerrero, even Chris Benoit. I think y'all broke the mold, though, when the purchase happened, because you became a big fixture of that, being the size you are, which, listen, I don't know how much bigger you are. I know you're a thicker guy than I am, but I know you're like, what, 5'10"?
I'm not taller than you. I think you are taller than me, you know?
Oh.
Yeah. You know, one time, I think I after I turned on Eddie and I was working with Ray, and I was getting reactions everywhere. I mean, I was getting booed out of the building, and I was still in a slot. I was still in that slot, but I was seeing the reactions that I was getting, and I was getting much more reactions than a lot of the guys that were above me, like in the card, you know, you want to say. And I remember talking to Vince. I said, Vince, you know, I want to be more a bigger part of this company. And I want to basically it was saying that I want to move up in that card. And he straight up to my face told me, he goes, well, Chavo, you know, you're not 6 foot 8. He 100% told me that. And I said, well, thank God. I said, I don't want to be Brock Lesnar. It said, look, when Brock Lesnar comes out, when he comes out, he's this monster. I mean, Brock Lesnar is a legitimately monster. He comes down the aisle and nobody wants to mess with Brock Lesnar. Nobody. I said, but when I walk down that aisle, they're like, oh, you know what? I can take him. I think I can take him. So I get a different reaction. And when I work my style in there, I get a completely different reaction than them. And he looked at me and he goes, that's interesting. Didn't think about that. But and that's Vincent actually told me that. So I was like, thank God I'm not 6 foot. I don't want to be 6 foot 8, 300 pounds. I go, that's not my style. It's not how I do it. You know, Ric Flair would not have worked if he was, you know, 6 foot 7. It worked because he's a 5'11 guy that was, you know, 220 pounds. That's you. Anybody looked like you could have beat him, but you couldn't. You know, so I just think that I embraced our size, you know. And you can say, oh, well, you know, it's a big man's business. And if I was bigger, I would have had the title run. You know what? That's all bullshit. It's like there's this, you know, Kurt Angle wasn't a big guy, Benoit wasn't a big guy, Eddie was a big guy, Ray was a big guy. They were all world champs. So it's how you work, it's not your size. Because there's a lot of guys that were 6 foot 7, 300 pounds that didn't get that shot.
So feeding off that, once again, reading through my show notes and reading through some of the stuff that, you know, obviously I didn't know about you before, you know, the transition of the WCW purchase. Really tricky here. Would you say the assessment of your career in WCW was far less than what it became in WWE because you were on the shelf for a little bit in WWF at the time? Not a big fixture. But then, as I read through the show notes, as the years go, you became a big player. I mean, you became a big player. You were beating major people for that Cruiserweight Championship and whatnot. Where are you at there? Like, in other words, you WCW better for you or
No,
established
WCW,
WWE?
I was learning in WCW. You know, I was super green. I had probably only had 10 or 12 matches before I went to WCW. And Eddie was there. The Cruiserweight division was kind of taking off. Eric saw me. Eric Bischoff was running at the time. He saw me. I had a tryout match with Steve Regal. Steve Regal made me look like $1 million, way better than I was. They hired me. I learned. That's what I was doing. I was learning at WCW. In fact, when the Radicals, Eddie, Chris, Dean, and Perry, when they jumped, you know, I got a call. Eddie called me and goes, hey, we just quit. I said, what? I wasn't even on the show. It was a show that I wasn't on. And they said, yeah, we just walked out. And I said, okay. And they go, what do you want to do? Do you want to go with us or do you want to stay? And I said, what do you think? And he goes, I think it's best if you stay because there's four spots that are opening up here. And you're going to be able to slide into one, like to a, you know, a spot. When you go to WWE, basically, what's saying is you got to be polished. You got to be at the top of your game. And that was how it was explained to me back, even back in the day. Like Steve Kern told me, he goes, you know, Chavo, nobody got to WWE until you were 10 or 15 years into your career, minimum. WWF back in the day. You didn't even make it here. You had to be polished, polished, polished. And he goes, now it's almost like they start their career here and then they leave and go somewhere else. And I go, yeah, that's kind of true. But so coming into WWF at the time when we got purchased, you know, there was a lot of people they brought over from WCW. Everybody was really on the shelf for a second, you know, and it really took me a little time to kind of find my spot. And then when I found a spot and then me and Eddie started tagging, that was over. I mean, we killed it. We were going, and then we had a great spot. But still, you fluctuate. So there were some times that I remember, you know, after that, man, I wasn't being used for a second. You know, it seemed, I think it's coming back from an injury, and probably it's kind of, you know, just kind of used doing velocity and or coming, you know, whatever. Really, that was a storyline, and you know, you can feel it. You know, if you're not producing, in it there, you know, they're gonna cut you. So I remember we were in Montreal, and the main event of SmackDown just happened to meet me and Ray in like a no DQ match. And we did it for my, I don't know if my dad was still there. I think he had left. But Ray and I had this altercation backstage, and they just, for some reason, put us in that spot. And I looked at Ray, I go, man, I go, I got to have a good match here. And he's like, of course, let's do this. We killed it. We freaking killed it. And as I came out of the ring, Vince looks at me and he stands up and he goes, well, gosh damn, you two are on top of your game. If you can get, because the crowd had seen it all. That was the end. There was already like an ECW match and a Velocity or whatever. And then we were at the end of the very last show of the night after dark matches, everything. And he goes, that crowd was tired and you guys got them. If you guys can get that crowd, you're at the top of your games. And I was like, whew, I needed that, you know. So there's different times in my career that actually happened to where you're not always on top. You're fighting all the time, you know. Everybody was, unless you're Hulk Hogan. I always said the writers were not writing for me and Eddie and Ray and you know, like Chuck Palumbo and those guys. They were writing for John Cena, Batista, Undertaker, Shawn Michaels. That's who they're actually writing for. We just had to kind of take the scraps and kind of, you know, make chicken soup out of chicken shit, you know. But once we caught fire, then they'd start doing some stuff for us. But you know, that's just the way it was. And I was fine with that. I didn't care. You know, I was super confident in what we could do. And I remember Eddie and I were tag teaming one time, not to cut you off, Jimmy. I know you're gonna say something, but me and Eddie, hold that thought. Me and Eddie were tagging, and it was SmackDown. Hogan had come back, and he was rocking, man. He was rocking. And Hogan came out. I think it was me and Eddie, maybe versus Mysterio and Kidman, or Edge and Kidman, maybe. Hogan came out before us and tore it down. I mean, the place went crazy. And Michael Hayes looks at us, and he goes, oh, man, I'm sorry, you guys. We put you guys after that. And I looked at Michael, I said, I'm fine with that. I go, no worries. I go, we're completely different matches and completely different wrestlers than Hulk Hogan. I go, just watch. We went out there, did our stuff. Place popped as well. We came back, and Michael looked at me and goes, you're right. You got him. Because I didn't care what part of the card you put me in, who you were wrestling, we were going to have a killer match.
No, I was just going to say that I found it very interesting. Like, as you said, the writers were writing for the quote unquote, I'm doing the air quotes here because we're not a video show here, the top guys, so to speak, and kind of left you guys to do your own thing. And you
We had to
guys
come up with a
got
lot.
yourself.
We had to
Yeah.
come
So
up with a lot of our own storylines.
you got, yeah, and you got yourselves over.
Right.
You know, and that's when they got their hands in it, but you guys had a lot of say.
You know who came up with Light, Cheat, Steel, and Los Guerreros? Was me and Eddie. Now, they put us as a tag team at first, and they're like, wow, these guys are really good. And they started doing stuff with us, but there was nothing. So Eddie and I, when Vince still ate at catering, Eddie and I went to and sat down with Vince and said, we have this idea. We want to do a whole Light, Cheat, Steel gimmick. And we started explaining it to him. He was like, oh, I love it. That's great. That's great. By the end of, I thought we were going to do vignettes backstage. By the end of the day, Bruce Pritchard comes up to us and goes, hey guys, so on Wednesday, we were flying Eddie out to LA. You're already there at Chavo, and we rented out a house and we're going to do some vignettes. I'm like, what? Like, I thought we were going to backstage stuff. No, they had rented a house in Beverly Hills as a set. We had catering, we had our own trailers, we had extras, we had directors. I was like, wow. Like, all that came because me and Eddie pitched that. The stuff with me turning on Ray after, you know, Eddie passed away, that was me pitching that to Vince. The stuff with me and CM Punk and beating him for the ECW title, that was Punk coming up to me and goes, hey man, I'd love to work with you. And I was like, let's do it. We came to Vince and we pitched that. The stuff with Kane, working with Kane, that was me pitching that. They weren't riding for us. Now, once that took off, now they went with it. But I remember Bruce Pritchard was having one of his podcast like shows that he does, like, and it was in LA. And so I went to go see him, and you know, he has special guests up there. And I told him, hey, I'm here. He's like, oh, you want to come up on stage? I'm like, yeah, man, sure. Well, he had some writer that I swear that he was there for 8 months. That was it. He came up and started talking, and he was like, "Well, you know, one time it's just being a douchebag." He was like, "You know, one time Taz pitched this thing, and you know, we were all like, kind of what, laughing or whatever." And I went up there and I said, "Hey, man, what's your name again?" And he goes, "Oh, I'm so and so." And I said, "You actually worked at WWE?" He's like, "Yeah, I was a writer for 8 months." I go, "8 months? You can only last 8 months? That's all you last as a writer?" I said, "Let me tell you how it really works, bro. You don't even know how it actually works in wrestling." I said, "So I explained this whole thing. We were writing our own stuff. We were pitching our own stuff because you guys weren't smart enough to write for us. You guys were so under and so scared from Vince that you were only writing for Vince, for John Cena, for Batista, for the main event guys. That's who you're writing for. You weren't writing shit for us." So I kind of put him in his place and I said, "You actually don't even know how, you were at WWE for 8 months and you don't even know how it works." And everybody goes, everybody starts saying, "Chavo, Chavo, Chavo," because I kind of put him in his place. And I looked at Bruce. I said, "Man, I'm sorry. I don't mean to come up here and do that." I go, "But don't ever look at the guy. Don't ever disrespect us wrestlers in there for pitching shit. I mean, look, I'm not a writer. I'm a wrestler. I wrestle. But you're asking me to write my own stuff. You're a writer. Did I ever ask you to get in the ring and go wrestle?" He's like, "No." And I said, "Well, then just shut up." I was pissed. I was like, "Man, what do you, you don't even know how it works. They're telling us to come up with ideas for ourselves." No, I don't know if it's still like that, but it was like that with us.
I'm glad I wasn't that writer because I would have probably just left the building.
I was like, "Are you serious?" When he was kind of like smug, kind of talking the way he was talking. And I was just like, "Yeah, you don't even like, you're talking about WWE and you were there 8 months." I was like, I have underwear that's been there longer than you.
So Chavo, be honest. Did you want to punch him in the face?
I didn't want to punch him in the face. I just wanted to put him in his place and say, "You know, bro, stay in your lane." It would have been like me talking about how, "Oh, the writer's room, this and that." I go, "I wasn't in the writer's room. Not saying that I don't understand how it works, but I wasn't there. So how can I comment on that?" And it's like, don't, you know, stay in your lane, bro.
It's like I say, I've been watching hockey up here in Canada since I was a kid. Right. Doesn't mean I can coach the Maple Leafs to the Stanley Cup.
Exactly. I love all the wrestling critics. "Oh, this, I give this match a 5-star match." "Are you an interviewer or are you a critic? Because it's two different things." You know, and they're like, I go, "You've never wrestled a match once. What kind of, you know, how can you give a star system to a match? You've never even wrestled." Now you can say, disclaimer, "These are my opinions. This is what I like. Hey, I love watching the space shuttle goes up and I can rate a space shuttle. I think that was a 4-star space shuttle launch. I've never been an astronaut. How can I actually know what I'm talking about?" Right? It's just an opinion. You got guys like Meltzer and other guys that they have, just because you write about wrestling doesn't mean you know what wrestling is. You can't give somebody a match. And I heard one time that Kurt Angle talking and that Meltzer's never given him a 5-star match or 4-star match. And I'm like, that's because he doesn't know what he's talking about.
Right.
He doesn't.
Chavo, you've changed because I wanted you to say you wanted to punch that bitch in his mouth.
You know what? It's still there. That guy's still in there. I just try to suppress him. Keep him suppressed because, you know, I'm trying to transition into the real world.
See, that's what we are on the RefNet Up podcast. Brian's one end of the spectrum and I'm the other end, and RJ kind of keeps the peace in the middle.
Right. No, I mean, that's good. You got both ends. You know, you guys have both seen it. But what are you guys talking about? You're talking about wrestling, the stuff that you know. You're not sitting there talking about and having, you may have an opinion, but you don't have, you're not an expert on things that you don't know. I could never talk. I sure. Could I go in there and try to be a referee? Yeah, sure. Do I know what you guys actually went through? Absolutely not. I was never, that was not, wasn't my job. I'll leave that to you, to the experts, you guys.
Hey, so Chavo, when you were in AEW, we were actually cross promoting, and I actually got to see you out there at the, what's that place called in Florida that they?
What was that called? The Something's Place. Something's Place.
Daily's Place?
Wow, one of those places. Yeah, something like
that. Yeah. Anyway, Jaguars. Me, you and Taz had catering together that day, and of course, we were not talking business. We were talking about how we love each other and all that kind of stuff and great times. Do you mind saying why weren't you there longer? I mean, because I mean you're a fixture that should be there or somewhere, unless your schedule called for something else.
That's what happened, man. Tony and I everything was going well. He liked the stuff that I was doing with Andrade, and it was going really good. But I knew that I was going to have to go back to Young Rock season two. We didn't have a time frame yet. We didn't have a shooting schedule yet. So when I got that, I went to Tony and said, "Hey, man, so just let you know, I have to leave in 3 weeks or whatever it is. I got to go to Australia for 5 months." So he was like, "Okay, no problem." He goes, "We'll write you off right now, and then when it gets done, we'll bring you back." I said, "Great." Well, 5 months in wrestling is a lifetime,
right?
I knew, maybe to about 3 weeks before I was supposed to come back. I was still kind of regularly texting back and forth to Tony, and then it just kind of went dark a little bit. So I figured they're probably moving on doing stuff, and it's just what happens. It's not nothing against Tony, nothing against AEW. It's hard for me to work for a wrestling organization because of my Hollywood schedule, because I leave, and that's really my bread and butter. That's with, Hollywood, with my Screen Actors Guild, I'm a part of a union. I'm my insurance, my pension, all that stuff that you never really got in wrestling. It's very, I can't give that up. And plus, I do pretty well when I work, when I shoot, when I'm shooting, I do pretty well. So it's kind of hard to match that and to leave that and go to wrestling full time. It's tough. I could come in and out. Yeah, sure. I wouldn't mind coming in and out here and there, but that is up to Tony and whoever is running WWE now.
Mm. All right, boys, we need to stop being selfish because we haven't asked one fan question yet. So we need to get to that.
Yeah. All right. I guess that's where I come in, but which is fine. We have Brad Stanton, who actually, as of today, just celebrated a birthday. So happy birthday, Brad. He wants to know, he says, "Great work on the Iron Claw." He said, "Which non-wrestler was the easiest to train?"
I get that a lot, and they were all great. And not just saying that, they're all great. They're all different in different ways. So it's in there, I'm the teacher, and they're my students. So it's just like teaching math at a high school. You can't teach the same, even though it's an algebra question or geometry, equation. You can't teach it the same to everybody because they don't understand the same. So it's the same thing when I'm teaching a actor to look like a wrestler in a wrestling scene. I'm not training him for WrestleMania. I'm training him to look like they know what they're doing in a scene for 8 minutes or 3 minutes or whatever it is. So everybody learns differently. So you have to adapt. Again, what we do as guerreros, we adapt, and I have to adapt and learn to teach that person, see how he learns, because I have the studios putting their trust in me. I have the actors putting their trust in me. I have to get to from A to B. I got to get there. It's up to me how I get there, So it's really, nobody was better. They were just all different, Zac Efron, Jeremy Allen White, he was very cerebral. He would actually kind of think about it for a second and kind of visualize it in his mind, and then he'd be able to do it. Zach would walk through it. He's very more dance oriented. So I would walk through things with Zach, and he would be like, "Okay, that's there. Okay, I get that." So I just have to teach them differently, But we've ultimately got to the, the point that we needed with all of them, if you've seen the movie.
Mm. All right. Our next question comes from Mark. As he said, "Did you have a favorite town or arena to work in?"
Yeah, man, of course, you always say Madison Square Garden because that's the garden, of course, that's an amazing place to be. But I like the arenas that were tight on top of you. So the old Portland Rose Garden, they were so alive because they were just, the atmosphere was amazing. The old South Carolina, Columbia, South Carolina, it was almost like a theater, like a stage. I don't know if you guys remember that, Jimmy. But they were, Scott, it was so loud because they were like on top of you, and it was like the atmosphere was amazing. I love those places, Wrestling at a WrestleMania in front of 80,000 people, It's different. It's tough because the reaction's different. You know, I do a move and then it takes a while before I hear the reaction because the front row will react, but I hear like, oh, the sound's got to take a second to travel. So you have to work differently in those. You know, like Staples Centers and stuff. Sometimes they were rocking and sometimes they weren't, you know. I love wrestling at the old Spectrum and the old and then right next door to at was called the something Bank Arena now, in Philadelphia, because Philly fans are so tough. And if you suck, they're gonna tell you you suck. They're not gonna give you like a courtesy clap. They're gonna tell you suck. So when Eddie and I were tagging, I remember we were the main event of a house show, and that's when I knew that we had something. I go, because it was the end of the show. They were live. The people were still going for it. And I looked at Eddie afterwards and I said, you know, we're doing something right. If we were able to get those fans, because they're Philly fans are tough and I love them for that. And if we were able to get them, that's how we did it. You know, I mean, that's how we knew we were onto something. But places like that, those were like my favorites.
We got another one here from AP Video. He says, what were your thoughts on Bron Breakker in this year's past year's Royal Rumble this past weekend? Don't know if you saw it or not, Chavo.
So I didn't see it. I didn't see the Rumble. But Bron Breakker, you know, being Rick Steiner's son, he's got to be good. You know, I mean, the guys, he's coming from really good guys, you know. So the things that I've seen with him, I'm a big fan. He's killing it, you know. So, and he's young. He's only going to get better. So super happy for him. I didn't see the Rumble. I heard about it. And, you know, but the Rumbles are one of those that, you know, watching it's always pretty cool, but being in them is not always great because there's just so much. It's hard. You can't tell a story in there because there's so much stuff going on. Once it got down to, you know, four or six people, that's when I really liked being in there. But it was so many people. Guy, your head was on a swivel because you're getting, you know, people are trying to punch you from behind and you couldn't fall down because somebody would land on you or step on you, you know. So it was, those are tough.
Double, I have one. RJ, let me sneak in through a fan. I'm sorry. Love you fans, but, you know, love me better. how much and think about this, and it may be hard question, maybe easy, because to me it was a harder question, but how much pressure was on you throughout your career to hold up your family name and your legacy?
You know, you don't really think about it at times. I can look back now and there was definitely a time, there was definitely pressure. Now, you know, when I first started, you know, it's tough because you do get the doors open faster for you. But as soon as you step through, they're expecting you to be as good as the rest of your family. And it's impossible. You know, that's the tough. The door will open, but it's hard. You got it, man. That's tough. And I remember one time just starting out and I was in WCW and I was a little frustrated. And Eddie sat me down. And he goes, hey, man, what's wrong? And I kind of explained to him what's going on. He goes, you know, man, screw those people. He goes, you know, everybody told our family exactly the same thing. They told your dad and his brothers, you're never going to be as good as Grandpa Gory. They told me, this was Eddie talking. They told Eddie that he wasn't going to be as good as his brothers and his dad. They told me I was never going to be as good as Eddie and everybody else because you're not, we're all different. And Eddie said, you're different. You're you, be you. You're better at me at certain things. I'm better at you at certain things. Chavo Sr.'s better at us at certain things. Mondo's better at certain things. So that's the kind of the pressure I had. And after that, it was kind of like, just be myself. You know, I just like whatever, you know? So I knew I was gonna be a pro wrestler my entire life. Cause you know, we grew up with a wrestling ring in our backyards. That was where that was our swing set, you know, legitimately was we learned how to walk. Me and Eddie both learned how to walk in a wrestling ring. So I knew I was going to be a wrestler. That's all I wanted to be. But you know, really, we got lucky. You know, there's a lot of second and third generation wrestlers out there that didn't make it. You know, and for us to be able to do what we did, you know, I'm very grateful for that.
That gives me, if I can, just one last question here, real quick, if I could sneak it in here, because you do come from a legendary family, Chavo, and And I'm curious to know who was the greatest influence for you outside of the Guerrero family.
You know, I had a lot. You know, I had a lot of great teachers. You know, I always say that when people say, "God, you know, child, that was really great." Except, you know, I had a lot of really good teachers, and it wasn't just my family. Of course, they were all very hands on. But guys like Arn Anderson and Paul Orndorff and Mr. Perfect, Kurt Hennig, Fit Finley, Steve Regal, Dave Taylor. God, so many. I could go on and on and on and on. But these guys were my teachers. You know, so. One person, I can't say one person. It was just this combination of everybody. And they all taught differently. You know, some guys would pull me aside. "Hey, child, we'll try this." Some guys would, you know, they'd beat the crap out of you until you got it. You know, like Benoit he was not calling stuff for you. He would bring it. And if you didn't fight back, then he'd just eat you up. You know, Eddie was able to lead you by the ear and have a great match with you. Dean wasn't. Dean was like, "Hey, if you're not stepping up, I'm sorry, I'm just going to eat you up." So you learn. They were teaching me just different ways, you know, so I can't say one person, but God, I Eddie for sure. But outside of my family, there was just so many people that had a hand in teaching me. Vince, H, Shawn Michaels, Kevin Dunn taught me a lot. And even just watching a lot of the camera guys, watching Marty and all those guys at the ring, those guys, I learned from those guys as well. Wow. From you guys. I learned from you guys. You know, it's true. I learned from being in the ring with you guys, and you guys were more experienced than I was. And you had done other things, and I learned what to do, what not to do, what works and what doesn't work.
One of the things I learned too is as much as I've learned over the years is I never stop learning, and I continue to learn as to this day. And
that's the thing. Once you think you know it all, that means you know nothing. You never stop learning. And then always, and there's never really losing. It was always winning and learning. So I believe that.
By the way, Chavo, the sad aspect of this business, which is not very sad. I love this business to death, just like you do. And it's given me everything I have in life. And it's given me a lot. But the sad aspect of this in today's world, these guys don't know it and don't do it like we used to do it. And go ahead.
You're right. You're right on that. It's changed. So I never want to be that guy like, "Oh," because I used to hear it when I was growing up. "It's not the same. We were way better. Business way better in my time." You know, it's evolved. Wrestling's evolved. It's just like anything evolved. Like the X Games, you see the motocross guys in the X Games. You know, was it like 10 or 15 years that the first backflip was done by Corey Hart? Now they're doing triples and all. It just evolves. It changes. So, and not that it's better or worse. It's just different. I do believe that the wrestlers today can learn a lot from what we did, just like we learned from my dad's era and they learned from my grandfather's era. You know, even to this, I saw something recently and it was like Pat O'Connor working. It was like a black and white, no sound video. Holy shit, this guy worked a arm unbelievably. I saw this and I was like, wow, it was amazing. And that was in the 50s. It was so amazing how he worked this arm and kept going back to the arm and all these different holds that these shooters used. I was like, gosh, you can always learn. That's what history is about. That's why I'm a huge history buff, not only in like history in the world, but in wrestling as well. That's how we learn, is watching tapes and stuff like that. So I think this generation can definitely learn telling stories better, and that's what they have to do. And the referees
incorporating old school with the new school, so to speak.
Absolutely, still works.
I mean, we used to make fun of Tony Garea back in my day, you know, but at the same time, it's like, yeah, back in your day, right. And you're, you know.
I hate those guys that I was, and I never want to be that guy. Like, "Oh, wrestling's better in my day. These guys don't know what they're doing. These guys are so good today. They're such better athletes than we were." I remember being at Lucha Underground and Ray came for the like a visit. He wasn't even working there yet. And he was seeing the stuff that Phoenix and Pentagon were doing and all these different things. And he looks at me and his eyes were like saucers. And he was like, what the hell just happened? Like these guys evolved wrestling. We were just like shocked. Like I go, not even that I couldn't do it. I couldn't even think about the stuff that these guys were doing. It was amazing.
Well, Chavo, I have one more thing to do because I want to get you out of here, man. I don't want to get you out of here, to be honest with you. Yeah. But the beers are flowing, and I love talking to you. But so me and Jimmy and RJ have this thing called Ref and Review that we do, right? So we go through the week's worth of work. Yes, I have to watch wrestling. Golly. Anyway, we go through and we critique and try and tighten screws, as Jimmy would say, not tear down, but to try and like help out the business. And the problem I have, yes, the business does evolve, okay? But the fucking respect and the way that you're supposed to treat yourself as being on TV and what you're supposed to be doing and doing it properly does not change.
Correct.
Does not. So we watch week in and week out, and we watch referees, A, get buried because they allow themselves, because they don't know what they're doing. Basically, they're doing exactly what you guys told me not to do, which you don't go by the script. You just get the meat of the match, and then we go from there.
If the shoulders are down, count them out.
There you go. There
it's
you go.
Finish them out. Yes.
It's that simple. But what I'm saying is the respect factor too is not there anymore. They are trying to be stars now. They're trying to put themselves over. It's unbelievable. If you were able to have as much time as me, which thank God you don't, to watch the shit I watch now.
Well, look, this is, I think the generation has changed. So it's not just wrestling. It's the generation in anything. It's anything. You know, putting the time in. And it's a different way of learning as well. Look, when I was there, I got my ass kicked a lot. And being in the ring. And thank God it's not like that. But at the same time, sometimes it was really good. I learned a lot by being told to shut the fuck up. And you're getting a slap to the face. And now you do that, you're getting sued, and now you're put in jail. So they're not learning like that at times. And sometimes somebody needs a slap in the face to learn. That's how they learn. And you can talk to them all day long, but it's not going to happen. So there's different ways of teaching. And I'm really glad that it's not the way it used to be. But at the same time, some of those tactics that made us who we were, that made us who we were. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's why we were who we were, is because that's how we were brought up, you know? And a lot of times now, you know, you got, like I said before, WWE, you didn't get to WWE until you're 10 or 15 years into your career. Mm. Now they start there. It's almost like they start the career there. They're, you know, they weren't wrestling fans, and they're a high school Division I athlete, and somebody scouted them, brought them in. They go, oh, okay, I'll try this to try to springboard my modeling career. You see that a lot, you know, and it's not always, but at times you do that. And that's, you know, if we got let go from WWE or WCW, well, we just went to New Japan, or then we went to AEW, or we went to Mexico because we were wrestlers. That we did. I see people, you know, they've been in the business 3 or 4 years and they got let go, and they're never part of the business again. That shows you how much that they actually gave a shit about the business. You know, it's like, oh, I'm done. Okay, whatever. I super respect for the people that actually go out and make it somewhere else. And now they go to New Japan and they come back and reinvent themselves. That's what wrestling was, you know? So I think that's lost as well.
Yeah. And I hate to continue to harp on the referee situation that Brian brought up, but like he said, they try to be characters. And I like to put it this way. And I thank you for saying that the referee is an important part of the match, but it's not about us. Our job is to help you tell your story. We're part of that. We're like the soup guy in the Seinfeld episode.
Right.
The guy, you know, everybody goes, yeah, everybody knows the soup guy. They don't know his name. All they know is the soup guy, the soup Nazi, or whatever they called him.
Yep. Well, same thing. The match is not about me either. anybody can go in the mat, in the ring, and get their shit in. That's a piece of cake. I can get, do all my moves, but to actually tell a story and make the other person look great. I always love the matches when you had two ring generals in there and they were trying to outshine each other by trying to put each other over more. A Ric Flair and a Steamboat. Those guys were selling for each other's stuff. And that's what made the match. They weren't trying to just get their moves in. So it's the same thing. The match is not about the referee, but it's not about each single wrestler either. Unless it's like a squash match or something that you're trying to get somebody over, a different story. But really it's about it's not about me. It's about what the match calls for. So I don't really care if I won or lost a match. It just depends about what the match called for, what the storyline's calling for. You know, so there was people that were, you know, kept they knew what their win-loss record was. I'm like, what? That doesn't make no sense, you know.
Well, this is my last thing, and I'm sorry, fans, if we didn't get your questions in, but I'm sorry.
We got to throw a couple more questions in there after you're done. We can do a couple more if you want.
This is going to be a good one here, I think. Your time in TNA, I was there.
Yep.
Loved it. I know you've been to the Red River.
That's right.
And for the folks that don't know what the Red River is, you don't need to know.
Hold on. What's the song of the Red River? Is Old Crow Medicine Hat.
Absolutely.
Right? What's the song? Wagon Wheel.
Wagon Wheel. Yes.
How many times did we listen to that right at the Red River?
Yes. We'll be at the Red River. And for you all that don't know what that is, you don't need to know. We've had many occasions at the Ale House and all that stuff. Describe your time in TNA, the new 2024 TNA.
So I loved when I was at TNA, I got there and we had the best locker room in wrestling at the time. I mean, there was Samoa Joe and RVD and AJ Styles and Kurt Angle and Hulk Hogan and Sting and Bobby Roode and I'm missing out on people. There's so many people. It was like the roster was freaking amazing. Doc Gallows and Knox and it was
LA Knight.
LA Knight, yeah, LA, Ken Anderson. It was an incredible locker room. And then when I kind of, after about 2 months, I realized I thought we were going to compete, you know, with WWE. And it really was just a play toy for Dixie, you know. And unfortunately, they weren't ever really trying to compete. I don't know really why not, you know, but, It was disheartening, you know. I loved my time there. I loved wrestling. You know, it was fun. It was great. It's really cool to see TNA doing well now and kind of wrestling all in general is doing well. It's cool to see them kind of went back to from Impact back to TNA. And, you know, I love having competition because it's great for the wrestlers. It's great for the fans. It's great for the promoters. And it keeps people it keeps those creative juices flowing, you know, and it doesn't keep people stale. I think the worst thing that happened to WWF is them is winning the Monday Night Wars and buying WCW because there was no other place to go. And it was horrible for everybody. I thought, you know, ratings were never as good as those Monday Night Wars. So.
Right. You're right. So Chavo, with that all said, man, hey, look, we want to get you out of here and I want you to put over all your social medias or anything you want to promote, anything like that. This is your time. The floor is yours, buddy.
Thanks, guys. So check me out on my Instagram, of course, at Chavo Grill Jr. My X or Twitter, it's called at Mex Warrior. And those basically tells everything's going on. I am on Facebook at Chavo Grill Jr. There's a lot of fakes out there. So just be careful. But with me, man, I'm just right now. I started a new venture. So I'm a huge golfer. That's my Curran White stuff. I love golf. And I took a lesson the other day and it was a quick 30-minute lesson. The guy had, you know, his iPad and kind of, you know, marked up the iPad with marks and stuff. And I was like, how come this is not done for wrestling? Wrestling has wrestling schools, but there's no online stuff. So I'm in the process now creating a business to have wrestlers, and it happens all the time. They're always telling me to watch their videos. So now I'm going to make a business of that. And that's coming up very, very soon to where They'll send me their video. I will critique their video, actually show them what they're doing right, show them what they're doing wrong. So it's almost like a private wrestling lesson. So that is will be in the works within probably the next 2 weeks. We'll be there. And it's also my wife is a nutritionalist. So I'm going to have like, you know, this is a body business and not a lot of people tell people that, but it's a, you got to have a good, your body in a certain way. So it's kind of an all encompassed training session. So people have asked me 100 times, why don't you, 1,000 times, how come you don't start a guerrilla wrestling school? If I start a wrestling school, you know, that takes a lot of time. You're got liability. Then I would have to, I would care too much about these wrestlers to just train them. Here, give me your $2,000, $3,000 and train you for 6 weeks or 2 months. And there you go. You're off in the world. I couldn't do it. I would have to start my own promotion and really, I give a shit about them way too much. So this is an easy way for me to help train people and not have to do all that. So, you know, there'll be a package deals and stuff. So I was like, it's private lessons, private wrestling lessons. There you go. That's my new venture.
Very cool.
Absolutely amazing, Chavo. Absolutely amazing.
That's awesome.
I mean, I have an app. I have an app, the whole shebang to where, you know, they can send it to me. I can show them their match and show my face and they're actually talking to them, what they're doing right. Draw on the app, draw on certain things, pause the app. I can actually upload a video right next to it of me showing them what I'm talking about. Okay, you're punching this way. This is the way I need you to punch. I could do all of that. So it's a private lesson. They can message me from anywhere all over the world.
I knew you were a smart guy, but when did you get this fucking smart?
I got a smart wife that to pushes me around a little bit and shows me how to do things.
Your wife what? Pushes you around and shows you how to do things?
That's right. That's right.
That's how you get through this life.
I'll tell you this. You know that I've created that show, Tales from the Territories, that created that with Dwayne Johnson, and we had a season of that on Vice. That was half my wife's idea. We were talking about this on a road trip, and we brainstormed and came up with this. So there's like two or three other ideas that I'm pitching here in the next probably next couple of weeks to reality show places and other places. So I'm dabbling in that as well.
Nice.
You know what though, Chavo? I'll say this, buddy. Not only I know you know, but I love you, and you know that I respect the fuck out of you. And I am so glad to see someone like you that does well outside of wrestling. I mean, the stories that outside of wrestling are very not good for the most part, to be honest. Your story, my story, Jimmy's story, you know, we're three guys that are doing very well, and thank God. Yeah. And we thank the wrestling world for giving us the life we have. And someone like you, who's being smart by your wife, to continue to make money. That's great.
No, I'm still wrestling. I'm just not in the ring traveling the world, but I'm still wrestling. There was a time when I said, I go, hey, God, wrestling would be the perfect job if I could wrestle, sleep in my own bed every night. And that's what happened. All of a sudden I went into Hollywood and became the wrestling guy in Hollywood. And, you know, there was a time that I was just working in LA and coming home every night, sleep in my own bed. And I was wrestling. I've been in the wrestling ring. I'm still getting punched in the face. I'm still training people. It was awesome. You know, it was great. And, you know, now I've had to go on location a couple few different times, but everything that I'm doing now, it's still wrestling from my own, you know, from my own beer, my Los Guerreros Mexican lager.
I knew it. I wonder if that bitch is strong, ain't it?
It's, well, it's not. It's 5%. It's a lager. So it's Mexican lager, like a Modelo or a Dos Equis type thing. So it's really awesome. You can throw down a few of them and be fine. I like to drink beer, so I don't like to have one. You know, an 8%, you know, IPA sometimes just knock me out. I want to drink 3 or 4. So that's what this is right here. So, but this is it's wrestling. What am I doing? It's right off of my wrestling career. So everything I'm really doing is all off of wrestling, but just in a different aspect of it.
Nice.
You're awesome, Chavo. Chavo, I really do really, really, really appreciate you coming on here. I had a blast. I think we could go another fucking hour, but
it's got to be a part two. We could do a part two and everybody come back, you know, for sure. I always love talking to you guys, you know. You're two of my friends in the business, for sure, and two guys that I respect and I loved working with at all times. So getting on a podcast with you guys was a no-brainer. Just trying to get it, just making it happen is all we have to do.
Talk about respect. Well, I always respected you. Always loved you, Chavo. You and Eddie, and God bless him as well. And you guys taught me so much and made me feel comfortable doing what I was doing. And I appreciate that so much, more than you can ever know.
Love you guys. Love you guys. Keep up the rough and rants, Jimmy. Grandma, I love it. I watch them all the time, man. And you're spot on. You're always spot on. It's awesome. I love it.
I appreciate you. Thank you so much.
Oh, Chavo, before you go, I just want you to know, not a sad thing, a really good thing. I loved your daddy. Your daddy and me had a many nights together.
No.
And a fucking awesome man.
It's crazy. There was one, nobody like him, right?
Ain't nobody like him. And it's very rare that I can't hang with somebody as far as drinking. And that's your man.
And before we go, I'll give you I know we used to do this all the time. I'll give you a funaki. What are you doing?
Yes.
See, there's another thing we could do. There's another thing you can spend another thing you can spend an hour on talking about. You needed that one catchphrase, and Funaki had it indeed, and he made probably so much money just off the t-shirt sales.
Oh my God, he was awesome, and he's a great guy, right? We have we got to do a podcast that's just all of our inside jokes, because we had so many different inside jokes to us, you know, for sure.
We would expose the business so hard.
So true.
Chavo, we love you, buddy. Thank you so much, man.
You too, guys. Thank you, man.
Guys, that was by far probably one of my favorite episodes. It was so great to just see you three tell these stories that only you guys know. It's like you back in those good days. But Jimmy, man, Chavo hit the nail on the head. You're spot on with these ref and rants. Tune in every day. They're all on your social medias, right?
Yeah, on all my social media platforms, Twitter/X or whatever it's called, Instagram, my Facebook, it's there. You know, like I always say, man, just a little critique here and there to help tighten the screws, because I want to see the business get better. And these are all my personal opinions and my takes. And hey, it's okay to disagree. If you disagree, just disagree respectfully. That's all I ask. And of course, you can catch me here every week with you guys. You can catch me on the Wrestling Inc. podcast after Raw and after Dynamite, where I give my takes on the shows that night. And that's pretty much it. And of course, I want a special plug. Thank yous to AJ and JD and those guys for doing all the work they do. And you too, RJ. Appreciate you. And of course, my good brother in stripes, B-Head.
Damn, that was very sweet.
Well, here it comes crashing down now. So let's go, Brian.
I am not crashing down, RJ. Stop it. I want to thank both of y'all too. You are for, I'm going to use Jimmy's words just because I don't want to say about you, but just holding the glue together. Yeah. And then Jimmy, just because Jimmy's Jimmy, he's great. He's fucking awesome. He's amazing. And your ref and rants are fucking awesome as well. And you can reach me if you want to at Baby Hebner on Twitter or Instagram. No, I did not use that word X. If you don't know what Twitter is, then you don't know what X is, I guess. anyway, Chavo was amazing, dude. And the history that between me and Jimmy, wow. Good stuff. I know we ran a little long this week, guys, but guess what? It's a good listen.
Yeah. And it's going to get even better next week, guys. We're going to be welcoming in Trevor Murdoch, a former WWE Tag Team Champion, former NWA, World Heavyweight Champion. Tune in to find all the good details. You can send over your questions as always for Trevor Murdoch at our socials at Reffin' It Up on Twitter and Instagram. Thank you guys so much for being here this week on Reffin' It Up for Mr. Jimmy Corderas and Mr. Brian Hebner. I am RJ. We'll see you here next week on Reffin' It Up.
One, two, three.